AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
And hope and love. Where do I find it in this crazy old world?
I need strategies, strategies for the radio. Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for the radio. Every time I listen, Lauren and David share strategies for living, and it makes me aware. I've got strategies for living. Strategies for living radio. Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for living radio. Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for living radio.
Oh, you know we need them. Yeah, we need those strategies, don't we?
As long as we're living.
That's yeah. Right.
Hey, folks, welcome. Welcome into another edition of Strategies for Living. I hope you're ready for your daily dose of radio rehab.
I hope they're ready.
They better be ready today. I'm Dr. David McMillan. She is psychotherapist PLPC Lauren Leon McMillan. And you know, Lauren, here's the deal.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can call 911, right?
Sure. Important.
It is absolutely important. But absolutely anybody can call. Anybody.
Yeah.
They can call any time of day. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. Doesn't matter what time of night it is.
Yep.
They can call from the penthouse, or they can call from inside a dumpster.
Yeah.
And you call and they show up. I mean, it's amazing mm-hmm. when you stop and think about it. Call 911, they come, they show up. And our life strategist today knows a lot about that.
I think she does.
Yeah. And she's going to tell us stories from the ambulance. Joanna Sokol is our life strategist today. She's got a book called A Real Emergency.
And I just have to chuckle because for a couple weeks now, you've had on the calendar A Real Emergency.
Yeah.
And I've just had to laugh because you've scheduled A Real Emergency for a couple weeks now. And just every time I see it, I have to laugh.
That I'm scheduling a real emergency.
You're scheduling a real emergency.
Well, maybe Joanna can help us out there. I love what the front of the book says. Mary Roach, who is a New York Times bestseller, says a best-selling author says, after a decade on the front lines of a very broken system, Joanna has let loose one hell of a memoir.
Man.
Compelling, shocking, funny, galling, urgent, and beautiful. Best she's read in some time, she says.
I am so looking forward to her life strategies because I know she's got some. Facing life and death that close.
Hey, folks, a real emergency today on strategies. We appreciate you being with us, and we appreciate our sponsors who make it possible, the Robinson Film Center and Azalea Cleaners and Pintail Roofing and Learning RX and the Balanced Life Wellness Center and Fertitta's Delicatessen, home of the Godfather, Alligator Italian Sausage, and some pretty good muffies, too. A Real Emergency. Stories from the ambulance today here on Strategies for Living. Stay with us.
Mind, body, spirit, and the groove. Relationships make you feel alive. In every truth and every deal, we help you thrive, not just survive. Mind, body, spirit.
And welcome in. Welcome into Strategies for Living. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan. Let's welcome into the program now Joanna Sokol. She has worked on a 911 ambulance for 10 years along the beach in Santa Cruz, in the high desert of Reno, and on the steep streets of San Francisco. And before that, she spent time as a ski patroller, wilderness EMT, and medical standby for raves and music festivals. I bet she can tell some stories. She holds a paramedic license and a bachelor's degree in biological sciences from the University of California in Santa Cruz. During her time at the San Francisco Fire Department, she received an award for clinical excellence and served as a member of the Street Crisis Response Team. Her literary work has appeared in Reader's Digest, Epica, and Hazlitt, and she's received a Sydney Award in 2019. She was born in Oakland, California, and currently lives in Santa Cruz with her boyfriend and a very stubborn dog. Joanna, welcome.
Welcome, Joanna.
Welcome into Strategies for Living.
Hello. Thank you so much.
So I'm going to hold the book up to the radio because I said in the intro that Mary Roach said this is one hell of a memoir. And I'll hold the book up to the radio so people can see. It looks like a little bit of a fire, a lot of fires coming out from the back of this ambulance. How long did you know that you wanted to do this kind of work, Joanna?
I really fell into it. I knew that I wanted to do, I really loved science and medicine growing up. I wanted to do something medical. And I went to college to try to study science and biology, and I really liked the material, but I really hated sitting still. Mm. I had a really hard time sitting in a library and studying when there was like a whole world out there full of streets and mountains and people and music. And I think that's somewhat of a common experience for folks that end up being EMTs and medics. So I tried my best in school. It was rough. The second time I dropped out of university, I ended up signing up for an EMT course at a local community college. Mm. And it was a bit of a whim. I really had no idea what I was getting into, but I was like, emergencies are cool. You know, let's try that.
Yeah.
And I went in, and I would say by my second day of class, I was just totally hooked. Mm. And never really looked back.
I was going to ask you, is this addictive? And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in a very positive way. Is it addictive to get to a point where, you know, you get the call and there's the rush, the adrenaline, you don't know what you're going into?
For me personally, the answer is unequivocally yes. It was completely addictive. In a positive and a negative way, there were times when I could tell that the work was really hurting me and it was time to work less or take a step back, but I couldn't. I loved it too much. Some people, not everyone has that. Some folks go into the work and say, this is not for me. But for a lot of us who really end up being lifers, it's completely addictive. It really does suck you in. And it's hard to imagine yourself ever doing anything else.
You see yourself doing this for as long as you can then. You see yourself as a lifer, if you will.
Well, I would like to. To tell the truth, I've actually piled up a bunch of injuries at this point. Mm. It's a really physically demanding line of work.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for most people to do longer than 5 or 10 years. Injuries are really, really common. And so unfortunately I've gotten to a point now where I miss the field. But I think physically I'm probably pretty toasted. I'm still teaching. I teach EMTs and paramedics. I love it. Yeah. I imagine that I will stay in the work in and in the world in one way or another for my whole life. But I think my days of working all night on the ambulance are actually probably gone at this point.
Well, yeah, but you're still in it. I mean, you're teaching it, so you're in it up to your up to your waist and
up
beyond.
To my eyeballs. Yeah. I'm still in the world.
Yeah,
I definitely found my tribe. That's
awesome. All right, so when was it that you decided, and what was it that pushed you to say, I got to write about this. And that led to a real emergency.
Well, I've always taken notes and kept journals and written stories. That's something I've done since I was a little kid. It's just kind of how I ground myself in the world, you know. I would go through a really intense experience at work, maybe a crazy call, maybe something happened that I wasn't expecting, and I would have to write it down. Sometimes even in the back of the ambulance, you know, just like sweating out caffeine and adrenaline, sitting there on whatever scrap of paper I could find. And I figured that sooner or later I might put the stories together in some way, but I really didn't know how. And for a long time, I wasn't thinking about a book. I was just kind of, I would fill up a journal and then like throw it in the pile and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't until the last few years of the work, once I'd been in it for a good like 10, 15 years, that I started, it still kind of started to congeal into a story. And it really isn't the story that you'd expect. When I first started, all the notes I was taking were all about the calls. They were about the people we were running on, the patients, you know, the healthcare system. Sure. And over time, that really changed. I started wanting to write about the medics themselves, about the people that do this work, and about what it means to do this work. Ambulance work, there's a lot of misconceptions about ambulance work in the media. You guys started to touch on it in my intro when you were saying anyone can call 911. It's really true. I think people have this idea that we basically hang around playing cards at the station, and then someone calls us and we run out and there's some really scary life or death exciting emergency happening, and we swoop in and we save the day, and then we cruise back to station and go back to playing cards. And it just could not be farther from the truth. You know, we're very, very busy. We do occasionally run really scary, exciting life or death emergencies, but probably 95% of our calls are not like that at all.
Right.
We spend a lot of our day working with the elderly, working with the homeless, working with mental illness, you know, with people in poverty who just kind of don't have anyone else to call.
Yep.
And so I started to really want to tell that story instead, and tell the story about what that work really feels like and means. And so it wasn't until the last, like, really 3-4 years of the work that the book kind of started to come together in my head.
The kind of gel. Is it possible, now that you're teaching, is it possible, Joanna, to truly prepare somebody? I mean, you know, I the reason I'm asking this question is, Lauren's a counselor. I practiced as a counselor for over 30 years. I taught also adjunct a bit, you know, for 5 years or so. And I'm wondering if it's the same kind of thing.
There's no amount.
You could keep somebody literally in a program, in a graduate program for 10 years. And you could let them out and say, okay, you're ready. And the first case that they got, they would say,
Nothing prepared me.
And I'm wondering if it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we try our best and we keep trying new things. And I don't think we've figured out yet how to effectively really prepare someone for the work. We're trying as hard as we can, but yeah, it's just so different when you get out into the field. You know, we have fun with it. We do a lot of scenario practice with the kids. And, you know, I did one last week where we were in the basement boiler room of the school, like the actual school's boiler room. We turned off the lights. We dumped a bunch of furniture and boxes and stuff in the way. We had the dummy like in the back of the room, you know, bent up against the back wall, and we didn't let them use any lights. They had to run the whole call with their flashlights to simulate the idea that you really were in a basement somewhere with no light, which really is the circumstance of how we often run. And, you know, there was stuff in the way and they didn't have all. So we do our best.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nothing like the real thing, you know, and it never will be. I really think it's really hard to prepare. You actually get out and you're like, what is happening? You know?
Yeah.
That's a great question. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to my, you know, I think I got a pretty good education, but the first week I was in practice, I got 4 out of 5 cases were something that we had never really touched on in any of my graduate work.
This is as you were a clinical counselor?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I believe that. And, the book isn't just in my voice. I interviewed a bunch of other EMTs and paramedics, and I have whole sections that are in their voices, which I really love. And some of them talk about that too. You know, you study what you can in school, and the schooling really, really focuses on those emergencies I was talking about, you know, people that aren't breathing or that are having heart attacks or that are bleeding to death. We get really, really good at people that are bleeding to death in school, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get out into the field and your very first call is like a homeless woman who's gotten in fight with the owner of the liquor store and they're arguing. And then somebody's brother shows up and he's got a tummy ache, but his prescriptions ran out. And then somebody else leaves with the equipment and you're just like, what are we doing here? Yeah. Where's the bleeding for me to stop?
Give me some blood. Give me some bleeding.
Yeah. Could somebody start bleeding, please, so that I can fix that?
I can deal with that.
Joanna Sokol.
Yeah, exactly.
Joanna Sokol, the book is A Real Emergency, Stories from the Ambulance. I think you can tell by now, you better buckle your seatbelt. We've got much more. We've got much more with Joanna today on strategies. So stay right where you are. We've all got lots to learn here on Strategies for Living. Be right back.
From the bayou to your table, we're keeping it alive with flavors from the family passed down to survive. The Godfather's here with a twist in the tail. Alligator Italian sausage, and it sure won't fail. It's the boss of the bayou, a taste you can't refuse. Italian tradition, Cajun infused. Godfather sausage, bold and true. The Padres bringing the bayou to you.
Get the Godfather Alligator Italian Sausage only at Fertitta's Delicatessen, 1124 Fairfield Avenue in Shreveport. Pick up a Muffy while you're there. The Godfather Alligator Italian Sausage. It's a taste you can't refuse. Sold only at Fertitta's, 1124 Fairfield Avenue in Shreveport.
Dealing with stress, pain, feel like you're running out of options? When your life is balanced, wellness is a given. True wellness is holistic. It's about the mind, the body, and the spirit, all in balance. Now, there's a place right here in Shreveport that's all about helping us achieve peak mental, emotional, and physical health. The Balanced Life, 117 Kings Highway, right next door to Strong's. Come see and feel the difference getting your life in balance can be. Many of your friends and neighbors have already learned the difference less stress and pain mean in their lives. You can book a discovery session right now online, thebalancedlife.us. All you've got to lose is stress, pain, or maybe both. Come see and feel for yourself the real difference balanced wellness makes. The Balanced Life Wellness Center, 117 Kings Highway in Shreveport, next door to Strong's, thebalancedlife.us.
Day makes you want to holler, get away. Looking for the road that'll get me there. Looking for hope and peace to spare. Looking for strategies, strategies for living radio. Your dose of radio rehab, strategies for living radio.
And welcome back into Strategies for Living Radio. A Real Emergency Today. Yeah, that's the name of the book. Joanna Sokol is our life strategist. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan, thank you for being here with us. Is there a, Joanna, is there a personality, is there a certain personality type that wants to do this kind of work? Or does it span across a wide variety of different personalities?
I would say that my number one favorite thing about this work by far is the people that I have met doing it. And there is a wide variety of folks that get into this work. It's one of my favorite things about the job. I've been placed, you're working in really, really close quarters. You know, you're working 12 or 24 hour shifts, stuffed in the front cab of a van together. Often we don't have stations or the chance to get out. And so you're sitting there at 4 a.m. having conversations with someone you might not ever otherwise get to know. Some folks get into it because it's in the family. You know, their parents were firefighters, paramedics, yeah. nurses, and it's kind of in their blood. That's pretty common. And then you meet a lot of people who come from a different path. You know, maybe they were doing something else for a living, and later in life they said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to help somebody. Maybe they were like me and they just kind of got addicted to adrenaline and emergencies when they were kids. There's a lot of folks that wanted to do something medical, but like me, didn't really have the attention span for going or the money to go to nursing and medical school.
Right.
It's a job that does not require a 4-year degree, which there's some argument about whether maybe we should start and it'd get us better pay. But I think it's really cool that you get people from all different walks of life, you know, and all different economic backgrounds, and you're all, and then you think you might not have anything in common with this person. You know, I've worked with people who had wildly different backgrounds, upbringings, political beliefs. And then next thing you know, it's 5 a.m. and you're walking through life and death together. And you're placed in these really intense, you know, kind of intimate situations where you have to trust each other. And it's really fun to learn how to rely on people that are really different than you.
Yeah. How has the work as a paramedic, how has it shaped your views on life and suffering and even healing? How has it shaped your views on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time imagining who I would even be if I had not done this for a living.
Yeah.
You know, it's been such a huge part of who I am and how I see the world. Mm-hmm. And I think you really do see humanity at its worst and at its best. Mm-hmm. You know, you see people at their absolute worst. You see folks that are just having a really bad day and they're being really mean to each other and they're being mean to you. And they're doing it over and over and over again. It's not just once. You know, we run the same calls on the same people and they're mean to us over and over. And you're like, man, people are the worst. This is terrible. And then you'll run a call on somebody who is working doubles to try to take care of their grandma. And they're just doing the absolute best they can, you know, staying up late, trying to make sure that she's cared for. And they got the toddler on the floor and your heart just breaks and you're just like, it fall in love over again, you know?
Yeah.
You really see the best and the worst. It gives you a really intense view. And I've gone through periods where I was really burned out and I was really cynical. And I was just like, man, F all this. I don't like any of these people. None of this is worth it. Yeah. And then the camaraderie and those small moments of joy start to bring you back around again. You know, one of your buddies shows up with donuts and starts talking, telling stories, and next thing you know, you're doubled over laughing so hard you've got stomach cramps, you know, and you're slapping each other on the back and you get back out there for more. So it really kind of brings you back around.
Yeah,
that was kind of another question that I had, you know, because burnout is very real for a lot of people, but I think especially for first responders. And so I was gonna, you know, what practices or perspectives have helped you personally?
Yeah, how do you stay mentally grounded?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time we don't. It can be really, really hard.
Yeah.
It takes a real toll. And that's something that without my prompting, every single one of the other EMTs and medics I interviewed at some point started talking about burnout and trauma and the things that they had been through.
Yeah.
And we're getting a little bit better at dealing with it these days. There's a lot more conversation about trauma and mental health. We started to do debriefs a little bit more often after a really intense call or situation. We try to talk it out. And, you know, one of the medics I interviews talks about how that's helped her get through some of her stuff. A lot of it is really hard. You know, as long as the shifts are really long and we don't have enough staffing to do the right types of trauma and burnout, sometimes those things stay really, really challenging. And it's kind of an ongoing fight. It's something the industry is really having a hard time with right now, is figuring out ways to cope with the limited resources that we have.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you interviewed a lot of your colleagues, you asked some questions, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So one of the questions, so like, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen? So I'm going to ask you that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a short little piece in the book where I make fun of that question.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Because people want to ask us that.
Sure?
And I
sure.
get it, you know, it's a really human thing to ask. And I think all of us have different ways of answering. You know, I have some really sort of funny, silly, gruesome stories, right? I can tell you the story about the guy who got really drunk with his friends and poured a bottle of hot sauce down his pants onto his private parts on a dare. And then, you know, we show up and he's buff naked screaming. I have a story about a guy who's got his tow truck stuck like 20 feet up in the air in the branches of a tree, you know?
Oh my God.
And those stories are really fun. They're really entertaining. People really like them. But they're such a small and like rare sliver of the actual work that we do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
most of the work, like I said, we're just running on, you know, an old lady who's by herself and her prescription ran out and she's got a tummy ache and she doesn't have anyone else to call, you know?
Yeah.
And
so you've got to go, you've got to go soothe. You've got to go assure.
Yep.
You got to be
yeah, exactly.
able to do a lot of different
There's
things.
There's a lot of hats you yeah. have to wear.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, or folks who are having mental illness and are really having a hard time figuring out their own life and communicating and dealing with their own needs. You know, we get people who are outside on the street just calling us for a blanket on a cold day,
yeah.
you know, and so those are the bulk of the work. And so the crazy stories are they're really fun to tell, you know, but they represent such a small part of the work. And one of the things I talk about in the book is kind of holding that balance, you know.
I bet you may have had to do some marriage counseling here and there.
People call us a lot for calls that you'd think would be sort of more domestic mental health stuff. Couples that are getting in arguments. I'm trying to think of a marriage counseling specific call, but I can't think of a marriage one off the top of my head.
How was getting through COVID?
Oh.
For you guys, I mean, was that traumatic? How can you even begin? Because
what was your
you know
experience?
The rest of
yeah.
us, a lot of us locked ourselves away because that's you know we were told to do that and we did. You couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Correct.
How'd you
yeah,
deal?
I mean,
how did
it wasn't,
you guys deal with that?
It wasn't awesome. It was not super fun. In some ways, I think COVID might have actually been more normal because. When I hear people talk about their lockdown experience, you know, or their shutdown, I didn't do that. I just kept put on my boots and went to work, you know, every day, the whole time, like I did before and like I did afterwards. And I think medics in different places had really different COVID experiences. I was in San Francisco during COVID, which is a city that locked down pretty early and hard. And so we had a lot of COVID patients. We had just barely enough masks, you know, but the equipment was really hard. The protocols kept changing. It was really, really scary. One thing that I think a lot of folks don't realize is before COVID, we would get exposed to diseases on the ambulance.
Sure.
Yeah. That was a thing that happened. You know, we had people coughing in our faces and
sure.
dying of scary viral diseases. And then during COVID, it all ramped up. But it didn't come out of nowhere. You know, that's always something that's been a part of ambulance work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ramped up. It got really, really crazy and scary for a few months. And then it sort of petered out and it just became one more thing that we had to deal with on this giant pile of stuff. And it already kind of felt like the system was falling apart before COVID. You know, we had we never had enough staffing. We always had too many calls pending. We get stuck at the hospitals waiting for hours for them to open up a bed for us. And then COVID hit, and it just kind of made everything worse. But it didn't, it wasn't, I don't know. It was tough. We all just kind of put on our boots and got through it. And then there wasn't really an end. It just sort of slowly petered out. So yeah, it was tough. There's definitely a chapter in the book about COVID. And I talk about a lot about my experiences in San Francisco. And I worked with a really amazing partner during COVID. We got each other through it. You know, we'd drive around the city looking for cookies to eat every afternoon.
Were you,
and listening to music.
Were you safe? Did you get it? Did you catch it? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got it a couple of times. We all did.
Yeah.
It wasn't, for me personally, it was okay. We were, one of the jokes that we were all making at the time is, early on for the first couple of years, they'd make you, if you got COVID, they'd make you go home and quarantine for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You had to take 10 days before you were allowed back at work. And for many of us, that's the first time I've ever gotten 2 weeks off to just go home and recover from an illness.
Yeah.
You know, I was really, really sick for the first 4 or 5 days. And then I had another couple of days to recuperate. And that was really nice. You know,
yeah.
I made soup. I got my strength back. And I was like, man, it'd be nice to get 2 weeks off every time I get sick. You know?
Really? A real emergency. That's the name of the book. Joanna Sokol is the author, and she's our life strategist. When we come back, Joanna, I want to, you and I were joking, you and Lauren and I were joking before we went on about what to call me. Well, I'm going to promote you. I'm going to make you what I told you to call me, laughingly. And tell us what needs to happen to be able to fix what's going on.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. You're getting a promotion when we come back. A real emergency. Stories from the ambulance. We're talking about it today here on Strategies for Living. We'll be right back.
Hey, let's talk about the Robinson Film Center. You know, I say it a lot. There's no place like the
Absolutely
Robinson.
Absolutely, there is not.
617 Texas Street, downtown Shreveport. You've got so much. You've got the movies. You got Abby Singer's Bistro on the second floor of RFC, open for lunch and dinner Tuesday through Saturday.
Newly remodeled.
Absolutely. Great menu. RobinsonFilmCenter.org is the way you check it all out. You can go to RobinsonFilmCenter.org at any time and find out what movies are showing. Here's the deal. You want to join the crowd, join the fun, become a member. When you become a member, you become a star. Mm-hmm. You get discounts on movies, you get concession upgrades, you get bistro deals. RFC, 617 Texas Street in downtown Shreveport. I'll say it again. There's no place like the Robinson.
There is not, and I'm glad we have one right here.
Absolutely. The Robinson Film Center.org.
Reading begins not in the classroom, but in your child's brain. I'm Donisa Walker with LearningRx Shreveport. If your child struggles to read, maybe he or she has trouble focusing or comprehending, LearningRx Shreveport offers a science solution to reading problems, working one-on-one with your child, targeting his or her reading skills. Today, call LearningRx Shreveport. Make an appointment to have your child assessed. I know you want to help your child. So does LearningRx Shreveport.
We all need help along the way. We need strategies, strategies, strategies for living radio.
And welcome back in to Strategies for Living Radio. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan, our life strategist today, a very special one, Joanna Sokol. She is the author of A Real Emergency. It's her memoir, and it's stories from the ambulance. And great story after story after story, not only hers, but colleagues that she interviewed and contributed to the book. It's a great little book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't want to get off all negative, Joanna, but I mean, again, let's be real. You mentioned it earlier. I think we all know we've got some problems. The system has some problems, right? So I'm promoting you. you're in charge of everything.
Congratulations to me.
Congratulations. Okay, so how do we go about fixing what needs to be addressed, what needs to be fixed? Because it's one thing to tell stories.
Well, and you've shed light on some things that obviously need changing.
So how do we go about, where's the starting place?
Oh, boy. I mean, I wish there was a simple answer to this question.
Yeah.
I really wish I could be like, this is the thing we got to do. Bink, I did it. I fixed EMS. One of the themes of the book is that a lot of the problems with EMS have been going on for hundreds of years. You know, this stuff isn't new. We're very much part of a community. But if I could fix some little things these days, I think a lot of it would start with staffing. I mentioned before when you're asking how we cope, and I get personally really heated sometimes about that because there's this move towards talk therapy to help with our trauma, which is great. It's very well intentioned and I love it, but there's really no amount of talk therapy that's going to overcome the fact that, you know, you've slept 4 hours in the last 48 and you've been working 12, 15, 16 hours with no breaks and no food and no hydration. And you don't have time to stop moving. Sorry about that. You don't have time to stop moving between calls, and consider what's going on. And so if we can fix staffing to where medics actually get enough time to rest and hydrate, it'll make a really big difference. I think personally, it might even make a bigger difference in mental health than all of the trauma and therapy moves that have been going on. So we really have problems with staffing, problems with call volume. It's really hard these days. You'll get to the end of your shift. You've worked a really rough 12. You're exhausted. And then the radio says, we still have calls on the board. We're going to need you to stick around for another 2, 3, 4 hours. So then you're at work for 15 or 16 hours. And those are the days that are really hard. Those are the ones that get you. Every medic I know says, I will work as hard as you want for 12 hours. But at the end of 12 hours, you've got to let me go home. You've got to let me go home. Rest. You've got to let me go home.
Could that be fixed legislatively, either at the local level or at the state level? Or even, I don't know, at the federal level. Could we legislate that to say, you know, airline pilots, as for instance.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Airline pilots cannot. And, you know, it doesn't matter. They cannot. There's a certain max that they cannot go over, period, end of the story, right?
You know, I'm gonna break the fourth wall a little bit. When I was reading up on this radio show, the description says Strategies takes a break from politics and discusses healthy living.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, my job is so political.
Yeah.
You cannot talk about EMS for an hour without talking about politics and legislation. Yeah. You just
Here we are.
You know?
We made it there.
Because you're absolutely right. I would like to think that there are ways to fix this legislatively. You know, airline pilots get brought up a lot. I've been driving the ambulance after 40 hours awake, swerving down the road saying, shouldn't this be illegal? You know, shouldn't this be not okay?
Yeah.
There's another really big issue that's actually national now. It's not just where I've worked. The phrase wall times really means something to EMS workers. So everybody thinks we get to the hospital.
Wall times?
Wall times. Okay. Yes. Everybody thinks we get straight to the hospital and we get swooped into a room. We drop off our patient. We go back to work. Right.
Right.
The reality in most places these days is we get to the hospital, and if our patient isn't actively dying right that second, their nurse will say, okay, sorry, we got no beds, grab a wall. And then what happens is you literally pull the gurney up against the wall of the hallway of the hospital, and you wait for a bed.
Wow.
And sometimes you're there for 3, 4, 5 hours.
You have to stay there with that patient, don't you? You have to stay
there.
You got
to sit on your patient as long as... Yeah. As long as the patient is still on your gurney, they belong to you.
Wow.
So now we've got a fully staffed ambulance that's been pulled off the street for like half their shift, essentially to babysit the hospital's patient for them because they don't have time for it. And I would love to see a world where that's not a thing, where wall times just don't exist, where we get to go in, drop off our patient, get back out on the street. Because that's a big hit to our staffing, you know?
Well, yeah.
And it's a problem that a lot of people don't even realize is happening. And I guarantee you,
I bet the majority of people listening to us right now, including the two interview, I never thought about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My boyfriend, my wonderful boyfriend, when he first found out about that, he thought there was a gurney exchange, like carts at Safeway, where I throw I wheel my gurney into the hospital and then I grab a new gurney and I get back to work. And I was like, God, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would be so much better than the current system. You know, mm-hmm. He's got an engineer's brain. It just didn't occur to him that it would work any other way.
Yeah.
But I bet you if there are any local EMTs or medics, I don't know what it's like in Shreveport right now, but I bet you if there were EMTs or medics listening to the show right now, as soon as they heard me say wall times, they groaned. They said, oh, you know,
and then they start saying they start shaking their head because it's as soon as you said it, mm-hmm. I can recall.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. I haven't spent too much time in the emergency room. But I can recall the last couple of times I've been in an emergency room, I've been with a family member, and I have observed exactly what you're saying.
I have observed exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
You probably walked by it without really noticing.
Right. And I never even thought about it until just this moment now that Joanna Sokol said something about it. Wow.
So, yes, if I could fix EMS, you know, it's a big, crazy, messy world. There's a lot of issues. But if I could wave my magic wand, that's one of the things I would start with. Because I think that's a problem that might actually be fixable, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
When you mention legislation, I don't think we're going to cure poverty anytime soon. No. You know, I'd like to if I could. That would be really cool.
Sure.
But I don't imagine that poverty or addiction or mental illness are going to go away if we make them illegal. But I do think we could fix... I think we could fix wall times. I think we could fix getting medics some rest and hydration and sleep, you know, and ways to get out of the ambulance and stretch during their shift. I think there's some small things that we might actually be able to do.
Absolutely. This book is going to make you think, folks. It truly is. You got to get a copy of A Real Emergency, Stories from the Ambulance. Joanna Sokol, our life strategist today. You're going to have to come back, Joanna. Share more with us here on Strategy.
Thank you guys so much. This was a ton of fun. I really appreciate it.
In the meantime, folks, you can continue the conversation with Joanna Sokol. Get a copy of A Real Emergency wherever you buy books. We'll be back to wrap up just a moment here on Strategies for Living. Be right back.
You're going to see the difference when you go to Azalea Cleaners. You'll hear about it, too. Azalea Cleaners has been fine dry cleaning since 1958, plus laundry, alterations and repairs, comforters, wedding gown cleaning and restoration. You'll hear about it from your friends because they'll see it, too. They'll notice the Azalea difference. Azalea is convenient. 732 Azalea Drive, 9220 Ellerby Road, and 9227 Mansfield Road, plus... the front door of your home or business with Azalea's delivery on demand. Just text SETUP to 249-8283 and Azalea will pick up your clothes and deliver them back clean and fresh to you. You can't get closer than that. That's the Azalea difference. You'll notice it right away. Others will too. The Azalea difference. Fine dry cleaning since 1958. Text SETUP to 249-8283 and get the Azalea difference. AzaleaCleaners.com.
Hi, this is Jay Merle for Pintail Roofing. Let's talk about quality. When you hire Pintail to build your roof, here's what you can expect. Quality and quality control are the most important concerns for us at Pintail, and you need to know that Pintail stands tall with swift and professional performance on any warranty call. This is our most important policy. And remember, we're your neighbors. We'll be here for you for the long haul. Our family's lived here for over 100 years, and we aren't going anywhere. On the commercial side of Pintail's business, our fluid-applied roofing solutions can save thousands of dollars over conventional commercial roofing options. Call Pintail at 226-ROOF for a free inspection of your home or commercial building. That's 226-7663. Pintail Roofing. What's the condition of your roof?
Well, you found them. Strategies for Living right here. Strategies for Living Radio. Lauren, David, and Joanna Sokol with us today. Yeah. Excellent book. A Real Emergency is the name of the book. It's stories from the ambulance. I just wish we had a whole lot more time for a lot more stories, but Joanna, folks
have
got to
book for that.
Get the book. What do you want to leave us with today? What do you want to leave with the strategies audience?
Oh, it's a big question. I think if you know any paramedics, nurses, firefighters, cops, doctors in your life, just try to have a little bit of grace and a little bit of patience. It's a tough job.
Yeah.
I promise we're doing our best. And I know we're going to screw it up sometimes, but we really are trying as hard as you can, as we can. And you know, just try to have a little bit of patience with each other, be kind to each other, and please, in the summer heat, drink lots of water.
I know
it sounds silly, but yeah. If I'm going to leave you with something, it's June. Just stay hydrated.
Yes. I think you earned your life strategist stripes right there. So thank you.
Thank you for your work. Look forward
to the next time you come back and visit us, Joanna. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was a wonderful opportunity for me.
And folks, you can continue the conversation. Go get a copy of A Real Emergency, Joanna Sokol, wherever you buy books. And thank you for tuning in to Strategies for Living. We appreciate you, and we appreciate our sponsors making it all possible. The Robinson Film Center, and Azalea Cleaners, and Pintail Roofing,
Roof.
And Learning RX, and the Balanced Life Wellness Center, and Fertitta's Delicatessen, home of the Godfather, alligator Italian sausage, and some pretty good muffies, too. If today were the last day of your life, you only had one more phone call that you could make, who would you call? And what would you say? And why are you waiting? Make the call. For Joanna Sokol and for Lauren Leon McMillan, I'm David McMillan. See you next time right here on Strategies for Living.